When Susan Allen found out that her husband, Clay, had been unfaithful, she faced two very important decisions. Would she decide to forgive him? Which ultimately she did. But second, would she decide to trust him again? That decision took a little more time.
It was a process of degrees of trust. There was probably a solid year, at least, of every move he made. He was accountable to all the details to me. And then it was a matter of him being accountable to other guys that he would travel with. And there's still things that to this day that he checks in with me on comings and goings with work. It was a long road, and he did whatever it took.
This is Family Life Today. Our host is the president of Family Life, Dennis Rainey, and I'm Bob Lapine. We'll talk today about how a spouse can rebuild trust by living consistently over a long period of time. And welcome to Family Life Today. Thanks for joining us. If you had a woman who came to you and she said, here's my situation, Dennis. I was married to my first husband, and in the midst of that, I started seeing another man, and we eventually had an affair. I left my first husband. I married the man I was having the affair with. Then I began to see problems in his behavior. I was suspicious and confronted him, and he confessed to the fact that he'd been with a prostitute. There were other things that were coming to light that led me to believe that he was involved in all kinds of extramarital sexual sin, including pornography and self-gratification, things like that. If a wife had just become aware that all of this was now out in the open and she came to you and said, what do I do? How would you coach her?
Well, you know, you didn't get there overnight, and so there's not going to be a quick fix in a situation like this. And one of the things you're going to need is a great resource to guide you through a situation like this. And we have a couple of ladies with us. In fact, one who went through a situation exactly like you're describing, Bob. Mm-hmm. The book is called The Healing Choice, and it's written by Brenda Stoker and Susan Allen. Brenda, Susan, welcome back to Family Life Today.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Brenda is a registered nurse. She's an author, a speaker, and mom of four. Susan is a counselor and married to her husband, Clay, and has one daughter. And together they wrote this book. And Susan, what Bob was describing was your marriage.
Indeed. Unfortunately.
There was a moment when your husband, Clay, finally opened the box and let you in. Mm-hmm. He shared all of what was taking place that he'd been hiding for over 7 years, living a secret life. Take us to that place when he confessed all this, and what did he say? And then I want to know, importantly, how did you respond?
And did he confess it on his own, or were you in the process of confronting him when he finally came clean?
I guess we'll call it the last confession.
The last confession?
The last confession.
You mean he tried other confessions that didn't work?
There were others that were partial. There was a big confession, but it wasn't complete. And we were talking about starting a family. And I said, I'm emotionally ready for that. He was ready. But I said, I can't go forward until I know what's going on. And so he gave me a confession that was 90% complete. But he left out a detail that for him he thought was a deal breaker. I guess he thought that it would be the end of marriage for me. But it was something in his head that was a line that he had crossed. It was an affair with someone that we both knew, as opposed to a prostitute with someone that I didn't. And he didn't tell me about it, even though I gave him several opportunities to tell all. But we moved forward from that after a little bit of counseling, and we both were newly dedicated our lives to the Lord in that last couple years there. We were moving in a different direction than what our marriage had been, but he was still afraid that he would lose me if he told me everything.
So there was a spiritual foundation that had now been built under mm-hmm. your marriage. Mm-hmm. He'd come almost completely clean, mm-hmm. left out this one fact,
mm-hmm.
did you suspect that he was leaving something out?
Mm-hmm.
Did you trust him and go, okay, if he's not going to confess to that, I'll believe it never happened?
Yeah, because I didn't have anything to pinpoint exactly. It was just this gut feeling, and I still was not used to trusting my gut.
You know, at that point, I want to comment because Bob and I have interviewed a number of women here on Family Life Today whose husbands have either been unfaithful by having an affair or unfaithful through pornography or some kind of sexual addiction. And almost to a person, they all knew.
Mm-hmm.
They knew there was something that was not connected heart to heart, soul to soul with their husband. And Brenda, you were there with your husband. Did you have that same feeling of feeling like there was something that wasn't quite right, some secret he was withholding from you?
Actually, again, I'm probably the one exception to the rule. We were early married. I was young and naive. I wasn't aware of anything yet at that point.
But you've talked to a lot of women
since
your husband Fred wrote the book,
right.
Every Man's Battle. And in a situation like Susan has described, where a husband sits down and comes clean, in this case 90% clean, as we've said, but a confession like this, nonetheless, is a devastating moment in a marriage. Do women most often get angry and shut down, or do they most often weep? What is there a typical response for women when this kind of an event takes place?
Well, I think the typical response encompasses a lot of things. There's the anger, the betrayal, the what's wrong with me, the I need to make over myself because something's wrong with me that I'm not satisfying him, the lack of trust. There's just a whole ball of stuff that is common to most every situation.
And all of that will kind of emerge in a stew of a response for a wife. Is that what happened
right.
with you, Susan?
Yeah, that time when he made that confession, it wasn't as painful as the next confession, because it actually made me feel like I wasn't crazy for the first time. He was telling me everything that I thought was going on.
Kind of already knew.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. So certainly there was a certain amount of anger, but we were both in a new place and ready to find ways to do things in a new way.
Were you saying that the second confession did make you angry and was far more startling and surprising?
Oh, yeah. As I told you, that first confession was in the context of starting a family. So we move forward with that plan in mind and got pregnant very quickly and thankfully. And so 9 months or a year later, we had our daughter. And it was when she became 6 months old that there were circumstances that I found something was amiss. And I confronted Clay, and at first he waffled and didn't acknowledge anything. But
so he lied to you?
Mm-hmm. Yes, that would be the exact word. Uh-huh. But God was pressing in on him, and he went and sat down with some of his friends and told them everything and was trying to brace himself to tell me everything. And he told me everything the next day. And it was like somebody just pulling the earth out from under my feet, because I swore I would never bring a child into a marriage with this kind of problem. I thought in my parents' marriage, I could throw my life away on a marriage, but I just didn't want to do that to a child.
So from his first confession, the 90% confession, until this second bombshell, there continued to be patterns hidden away. He continued to have unfaithfulness? Was he continuing to look at pornography and continue to be involved in sexual sin?
Well, what happened very specifically was that he didn't confess one time an affair. And the behavior that tripped him up was that very thing. It was as though Satan had a hook in him, and that was the very thing, which he really hadn't done that kind of thing before other than this time. And he had a series of these kind of one-time encounters. There was a period of time after that other confession that he didn't, but you can only try so hard mm-hmm. when when you're not fighting Satan on with the proper tools.
And so he caved in and had another affair?
He did. And
you were pregnant at the time?
Yeah. There probably was. I don't really remember all the details, but there was a handful between the time of that and the time up till she was 6 months old.
Wow. I mean, Susan, you had to feel absolutely trapped because the context of this discussion was around starting a family. You felt like he'd come clean.
Yeah.
And now you got a baby.
Yeah.
The result of trust, which is really the core issue what we're talking about here.
Yes.
When a man steps away from his vows, mm-hmm. and becomes unfaithful, whether it's to pornography or to a prostitute or a one-night stand or to an ongoing affair, nonetheless, the vows are breached. The trust can be broken.
Yeah.
So as best you can, take us to that place. Was it in your home when he said, I need to have a conversation with you? I mean, describe the scene and tell us what you were feeling. And as best you can remember, tell us what he said.
I don't remember his exact words. I remember the overall what he confessed to me. What I remember was what I felt. I felt numb. I felt nauseous. I felt my head was spinning. I felt like I'd been punched in the gut. It was as though my world had just imploded. It wasn't the first time I've had this feeling, but it was the most major impact I've ever experienced, that kind of just gut-wrenching.
Did you cry? Did you scream? Did you run out of the room? Did you start hitting him? What did you do?
At first there was silence, he said. And then I believe I probably said, how could you? I'm not a really big screamer. I can get my voice up, but I don't scream. I didn't hit him. I'm a little too, I guess, intellectual for them. But
just watching you process this, relive it, as you're telling us here,
mm-hmm.
the pain was unspeakable.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's what a man needs to hear who's listening today, that when we betray our wives, and we may already know this, it really is a breach of the most intimate trust a man and a woman make on this planet. It's the bonds of marriage.
Absolutely.
And that's what you felt like was being ripped in two at that point.
Yeah.
Were you thinking to yourself, I'm out of here?
Yes.
Take the baby? Leave?
Yeah, I'll take the baby. Yeah. You're never going to see her again. Yeah. I did have those kind of thoughts.
Did you say that to him?
No.
So what did you do?
I told him to leave. I figured I was a different person than I was before, and I really didn't fear heroism with a baby, but the difference was I wasn't afraid to be alone now, and I needed time. I was going to give myself the gift of time to process, to decide what to do. And even though my emotions were just raging, I was going to really work through it and not allow Clay's worry about what's going to happen with his marriage concern me with what I needed to do. And I really didn't know what I was going to do. I didn't know. I mean, I couldn't trust him past the doorway, what he was going to do outside of my sight. But the biggest thing that happened for me in the change in walking with God was deciding to do things God's way and not my way. Uh-huh. You know, if you read through my book, you saw how many really bad decisions I made using my wisdom. Mm-hmm. Not good.
So there was a thought in your head that I know how I'm feeling,
mm-hmm.
but I've got to ask a different question than I would have asked before. I've got to ask, what would God have me do here, right?
Yeah.
That
yeah.
was really a new question for you.
It was. And he didn't give me a pat answer. He really gave me a weight kind of an answer, which wasn't a...
God gave you a weight kind of an answer?
Yeah, it wasn't stay, it's all going to be okay, or leave now, you know.
I want to read the passage because this is really where you were at this moment. And we don't talk about this verse enough in the Christian community today. Romans 12:1-2. I appeal to you, therefore, brothers, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that by testing you may discern what is the will of God, that which is good, acceptable, and perfect. As I listened to your story, Susan, what was different in your life was you were living this out. You had given your life to Christ, and you were attempting to listen to what is God's will for me, not what does the world want me to do. The world would say, throw the towel in, divorce him, get everything you can get out of it, take your daughter, and find a safe place. But the Scriptures don't call us to put our brains and park them off to the side and just do something mindlessly, but they do call us to tough love.
Yeah.
And that's what you did.
Yeah, it was pretty tough.
What was
It was loving.
It was loving, but what did he do? What was his response?
He was willing to do whatever it took. Whatever it took. He was in a broken place for the first time. And he did whatever it took.
How do you rebuild trust?
With a long measuring stick. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a day.
Called T-I-M-E. Mm-hmm. Lots of time.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't a year.
Mm-hmm. I've talked to husbands in the other side of this situation, the husband who has been an offender. And we need to say, I think, at some point that sexual sin can happen on either side of a marriage. A wife can be the one who has been involved in repeated affairs or even in romantic fantasies. This isn't always a husband-wife situation, although typically in this culture, pornography is a male-dominated issue, and wives are the ones who are experiencing what Susan experienced. But I've talked to men who say, how long before my wife's going to trust me again? And I have said, here's the formula. Consistent behavior over time, CB over T is your formula. You have to demonstrate consistent behavior over time. And they say, how long's the time? And I say, as long as it takes. Because most of the time I'll say, well, how long was the pattern of sin?
Yeah.
And I say, it's going to be at least that long, maybe. I mean, could be that long, could be longer than that. But you got to understand, this is a significant breach.
I've actually had guys who have had patterns of this over a 10-year period want to flip the switch.
Mm-hmm.
And a part of it's the way we're wired as men. We want to fix things. Right. We want to flip a switch so we can move on. We want, okay, forgive me,
mm-hmm.
so we can be okay.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me we're okay. But a 10-year mess can't be cleaned up overnight. And it can't be cleaned up, as you've just said, in a year. And in your situation, how long would you say it took you before you regained trust? And I'm assuming that today you trust Clay.
I do. It was a process of degrees of trust. There was probably a solid year, at least, of every move he made. He was accountable to all the details to me. And then it was a matter of him being accountable to other guys that he would travel with, and there's still things that to this day that he checks in with me on comings and goings with work. He's self-employed, it was a long road. And
so how long? I'm a man. I'm just wanting to know how long it took you for you to ultimately trust him. We know it was more than a year.
Mm-hmm.
It's been now how long?
About 14 years.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. A good solid 2 years before I could really feel fairly comfortable that he really was a changed person.
And that's what you were looking for. You mm-hmm. were looking for is, are these old patterns going to reemerge? Because a guy can clean up his act mm-hmm. for a month or mm-hmm. two or three. But for a wife to feel like real change has taken place, like I said, it's got to be consistent behavior for a long period of time. I want to ask both of you, because we've got women who are listening who are either about to hear a confession from their husband. They don't know it, but it's about to come, and it's going to rock their world the way it rocked your world.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe they've just heard it, and the world's been rocked, and they said, get out, and they're trying to figure out what the next step is.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe they're in the rebuild process, but their soul is still aching over the news of what's going on. If you were on the phone with that woman today and she said, I just need some coaching here. How do I get from where I am today? Is there really light at the end of this tunnel? What do I need to do? Not what does my husband need to do, but what do I need to do? How would you coach her?
Well, I think Susan and I probably have a couple of different ideas on this one, but one that I have found extremely important over all the years since Fred and I have dealt with this, learned about it, written about it, is that women typically, we have no clue about the differences between men and women sexually, what causes a man to get into this, how it can be addictive, why does he keep going back to it, why is she not enough for him? And so one of the most important things to me is that she really educate herself on that. Fred and I had written a book a couple of years ago called Every Heart Restored, and the main thing in that was to just lay out the differences so she can see. And when you can defuse the feeling of it was all my fault and the anger at him by understanding this is what's behind the behavior.
You're not excusing the behavior.
No, you're not excusing. You're just understanding. These are some of the differences. This is what causes it, because we are totally different, men and women. And so first of all, read and understand, learn about what men are like, learn the differences. And then equally important would be developing a deeper, closer walk with the Lord yourself, because you're sure going to need it. And then I know Susan would have great stuff on accountability and help in groups.
Well, what every woman needs beyond connectedness with God is connectedness with other women that she can talk to, that understand what she's going through, and an understanding of what it is she's going through, which is, of course, a good resource like the book that we're talking about today. But I can't overemphasize the need to have other women, because one thing that this situation does is it isolates. There's a tendency for, if she wasn't already isolated because of some things going on in her marriage surrounding this issue, she will isolate because of the shame.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't, who could understand? She'll feel that it's about her, and she will not want to talk to other people.
Did you open up? Did you have a friend or somebody you went to and somebody who walked the path with you?
God had put those people in our life, setting it up before that day came, and it was instrumental. And that's how we used that as a model for what every woman and man needs, because of how much help it gave for us in walking through our situation. And not everyone has that ready built into their lives, those people in that network of people. And so we've helped to create those kind of small, intimate settings of men and women.
And I want to just comment, Susan, on something you said there. If I could just speak to the woman who may find herself in a unique spot of having a wife come to her and confide something like this, you need to be safe. You need to be a safe place for someone to come and at points dump their sorrow, almost like toxic waste.
Yeah.
And not pick up stones to condemn the husband or to shame her. The Christian community ought to be the safest place on the planet.
Absolutely.
The church, what is it but a bunch of sinners? We've all failed.
Yeah.
Okay, this is an area of failure, and I'm not minimizing the failure here, but we really need to check our view of grace, that we're all in need of forgiveness and all in need of grace. And, you know, I just appreciate both of you coming on our broadcast and sharing your story with us. Your book outlines how a woman can respond in the midst of the trauma of this. And I just want to encourage women to grow personally through this, spiritually, in your relationship with God, to pray, to get in the Word, and to get your marching orders from God, not the world, because the world's going to send you a different message. You need to get in with some other people who do know you, as you said, and some other couples where healing can occur, and that can be expressed to your husband. I know that Clay developed a relationship, Brenda, with your husband, Fred.
Right.
And that's really how this book came about, in part. And that accountability really helps you trust him today because of that relationship. And then ultimately, I want to encourage the person who's listening right now, who may find themselves in this situation, to forgive. Ultimately, forgiveness is not optional in the Christian community. It is the fabric of what a Christ follower does. And that doesn't mean you do that overnight. It doesn't mean you do it flippantly. But as earlier, Brenda demonstrated, it does begin in the heart, and then it makes its way out into words. And ladies, thanks for sharing your story.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us. It's been a pleasure.
You know, as you were talking, Dennis, I was thinking of 1 Corinthians 6, where the Bible says, don't you know that the unrighteous will not inherit the kingdom of God? Don't be deceived. Neither the sexually immoral or idolaters or adulterers, and it goes on, men who practice homosexuality, thieves, the greedy, the drunkards, the revilers.
And I know the phrase you're about to read.
Verse 11, and such were some of you.
Mm-hmm.
But you were washed, you were sanctified, you were justified in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ and by the Spirit of our God. And that message of grace that you were talking about, we have to remember, yeah, there is a standard of holiness that the Bible calls us to, and we've all fallen from it. Now, our question is, are we going to help men and women get pointed back in the right direction?
And are we going to come alongside marriages that are struggling because of an issue like this and cheer them on to stick together and to finish the course together? That's the great need within the Christian community.
That's right. We need to be full of grace and truth as we intersect with others. And it helps to have resources like what Brenda and Susan have written, the book, The Healing Choice, to provide coaching for how you get from where you are to where God wants you to be. And let me encourage our listeners to go to our website, familylifetoday.com, and there is information available there about this book. Again, it's familylifetoday.com. You can go online to order a copy of Brenda and Susan's book, The Healing Choice, or call 1-800-FL-TODAY, 1-800-358-6329, 1-800-F as in family, L as in life, and then the word today, and we'll let you know how you can get a copy of this book sent to you. And we hope you have a great weekend. Hope you and your family are able to worship together this weekend, and I hope you can join us back on Monday when we're going to talk with author and speaker Mary DeMuth about what it means to be a first-generation Christian and how you can have the Christian family you didn't have when you were growing up. I want to thank our engineer today, Keith Lynch, and our entire broadcast production team. On behalf of our host, Dennis Rainey, I'm Bob Lapine. We will see you back here Monday for another edition of Family Life Today. Family Life Today is a production of Family Life of Little Rock, Arkansas. Help for today, hope for tomorrow.